Good morning. I'm speaking this morning with Nimipu Mole Julian Ankeny, who, when not producing segments for The Old Mole, is the director of Native Programs at Washington State University Vancouver, the co-director of WSU's Visiting Writers Program, and is also right now very busy helping to coordinate the SJCon Social Justice Conference, which she was also centrally involved in launching 5 years ago. And also with us here this morning is Lakota Cheyenne Mole Robin White, who is an artist and a longtime organizer who's participated for several years now in SJCon. And finally, also with us here this morning is Ashta Buse, who is a WSU undergrad and a student organizer with the Collective for Social and Environmental Justice. Ash is majoring in environmental sciences and minoring in queer studies and in women's gender and sexuality studies. And so thanks all for joining us this morning to talk about the conference, which is coming up on April 19th and 20th. The conference is free, open to the public. It is predominantly virtual on Zoom this year, and it's focused this year on health and environmental justice, constructing coalitions at the intersections of extraction, militarism, and climate collapse. Ash, since you have to leave here in a bit, why don't you start us out and maybe just tell us a little bit about some of the connections that you're making to climate collapse and how boycotts and divestment kind of fit in with this constellation of issues.
Absolutely. So from annual reports from the IPCC, or Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, in 2023, globally, our carbon emissions hit a new record high. Globally, in 2023, our carbon emissions hit a new record high. Low-wealth frontline climate communities in the U.S. and around the world are experiencing increasingly erratic and catastrophic weather. Climate collapse is the byproduct of colonial violence and imperialism, and climate justice organizing has yet to step up to tackle the carbon impacts of war and militarism. Whereas the U.S. military is the largest single institutional emitter of carbon worldwide, the economy of the Pacific Northwest in particular is interwoven with the military-industrial carceral complex, and BIPOC communities both here and abroad bear disproportionate environmental burdens, from tsunamis to nuclear waste to oil and chemical spills. As of 2022, over 1,500 institutions globally that have over $40 trillion in assets have committed to some level of fossil fuel divestment, but more action is needed. We need to mobilize institutions of higher education, faith communities, unions, and local and state governments to divest from these extractive industries and the war industries that they fuel. As activists and community organizers, we need to move beyond theory. Social justice requires action, and that action must be rooted in lived experiences and in the land that connects us all.
You are going to be presenting on a panel on gendered violence. Do you want to talk a little bit about that panel and about some of the work that you're doing and that you're going to be speaking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So the particular panel that I will be presenting on is about gendered violence. And my particular presentation is looking at current events in the United States and the United Nations definition of genocide and how transgender identities are under attack in a way that fulfills the UN's definition of genocide. The presentation that I have also includes gender and feminist theory, and demonstrates that all oppression is linked by the systems of oppression and the methods that those systems use.
NABU's own Emma Lugo is also going to be presenting on that panel and is going to be talking about the legislative assault on transgender rights in the U.S. And also on that panel is Nishant Shahani, professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at WSU Vancouver. And he will be speaking about Israeli pinkwashing. And we just want to note also that Emma Lugo will also be on the plenary panel. Emma is also with Jewish Voice for Peace, and we will be obviously making those urgent connections to the genocide that's unfolding in Gaza. You're not presenting on a panel that's exclusively an undergrad panel, but we do have a number of panels that are going to be specifically featuring undergraduate presentations. So I know you got to run, Ash. Is there anything else that you wanted to say?
These conversations are particularly important. This particular conference, I think, is doing its best to bring all of these issues together that are connected. And I think that the more people can see that, the better. This isn't my issue is more important than your issue. It's a we are connected by these issues. They impact different people in different ways, but we are not in silos. We are not separated from each other. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks so much, Ash. And Robin, you're going to be speaking on a panel about the Thin Green Line as People, this history project. Did you want to tell us a little bit about the project and why you think it's important?
Yeah, the Thin Green Line is an incredible historical archive online that's been kind of a goldmine for activists and organizers to find relational materials as far as journalism, being able to see a lot of documents on there related to all fossil fuel activism projects in Washington State or in the Northwest in general. Just really has a lot of different things. We'd like it to be a something that's perpetuated by the activists that are working in the Northwest and organizations that are working in the Northwest, so that it's a continued effort and a continued place for activists and organizers to come. One of the important things about it is we have a speakers bureau tied to the Thin Green Line as People. And these are some extraordinary people from the Northwest and from other places that have worked as activists in the fossil fuel fights in the Northwest. There's a lot of representation of Native peoples in particular, and people that are most affected by fossil fuels and climate collapse. If you are a school, particularly in Oregon, you can have these speakers come at no cost. We'd love to set that up for you if you're interested as a school in Oregon, whether that's a high school or higher ed. Please get a hold of Julian Ankeny. And I believe that's julian.ankeny@wsu.edu. We were lucky enough to be funded by the Spirit Mountain Fund, the Grand Ronde. These speakers bureau will run through May as a paid speakers bureau. So please get in line quickly and make reservations. We're running out of speaker slots. We also have developed a curriculum that goes along with this for the school systems and for others that are interested, thanks to Angie Morrill from the Klamath Tribe.
And as part of that same panel, we're also going to hear from some WSU undergrads who worked with Professor Patty Wild to develop curriculum for other undergraduate students from those documents. So, Julian, do you want to tell us about some of the other panels and a little bit of the history of the conference as well?
Yes, Katiao Yao. Thank you, Desiree. So WSU SJCon is an interdisciplinary social justice conference that came into fruition from the labor organizer and all-around brilliant mind of Catherine Manis. And then SJCon was then launched in 2019 by WSU Pullman graduate students in coalition with BIPOC and LGBTQIA 2S led groups. We have since migrated to WSU Vancouver, where we have made it our new home. We're so happy here. And then we have also accepted proposals on presentations, panels, film screenings, creative and multimedia art, community-led tours by regional activists, and plenary sessions that focus on action-based approaches to building and sustaining coalitions across community. Yeah, and here is a little snapshot of a few of our panels, beginning with a panel on artivism, art and movement building, resistance, resilience, and reclamation. This panel has an absolutely amazing lineup of artists. So you have to register for this conference. We have another panel by the Columbia River Keepers that they are doing on the Bradford Island Superfund cleanup. It just brings me so much joy to also have a jam-packed day of events as well for our joint WSU Vancouver and Collective for Social and Environmental Justice, CSEJ, and Native American Programs fundraiser. On Sunday the 21st, we will be featuring a tour from the founding member of the Portland chapter of the Black Panthers in North Portland, Kent Ford. And we are also featuring a few different screenings by Indigenous director and filmmaker, also a WSU alumnus, Misty Shipman, enrolled member of the Shoalwater Bay Tribe of Indians, called the Handsome Man, literally starring Lily Gladstone and Evan Adams.
Woo!
This is another win for Indian Country. WSU alum. Another film is called Atomic Bamboozle that tells the story of the nuclear resurgence and how the nuclear industry is repackaging nuclear power as safe. And lastly, a film called Radioactive, The Women of 3 Mile Island. For further information, please contact the beautiful Desiree Hellegers. That is Desiree, period, Hellegers, at WSU.edu. Tatsiao yao. Thank you so much.
Tatsiao yao, Julian. Thank you. So the conference is Friday and Saturday, and then on Sunday, you've got just a day that's jammed full of events afterward. And so the fundraiser that you're talking about is at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Vancouver, Washington, and that's 4505 East 18th Street. So we'll be posting more of that information on the conference website, which we will post along with the show on Monday. I just want to note also that at that fundraiser on Sunday at the Unitarian Universalist Church, filmmaker Misty Shipman will be there on hand to talk about her films. Filmmaker Jan Hocken will also be talking about Atomic Bamboozle, and filmmaker Heidi Huttner will be speaking virtually. And so, Julian, can you talk a little bit more about the garden that the fundraiser is going to be helping to support? WSU Vancouver has a new garden, or new gardens.
Yes, yeah, yeah, Desiree, once again. The garden is really going to center and uplift the legacy of Indigenous knowledge holders so that they can in turn share their experiential knowledge for the benefit of students, for Indigenous students and WSU students, but also the larger community. So our ancestors have created this pathway into the future that have always been centered and uplifted food sovereignty, sustainability, and community-centered regenerative food economies and infrastructures. So again, these pathways really center knowledge for the preparation and cultivation of our futures, centering Indigenous ecological knowledge, environmental activists, artivists, infrastructure innovation, and community support, featuring, you know, Native environmental stewards that have the potential to benefit and influence more than just Native community. Indigenous people hold the solution to these expanding problems through our respective traditional teachings, ancestral lifeways and landscapes that spur our ancestors to optimize collective, reciprocal, and also regenerative systems and economies embedded with innovation and place-based systems from that, again, sprang from our ancestral knowledge holders. And again, these are not new ideas. These systems in turn cultivate community self-reliance, determination, and the resiliency that's really centering community. And again, food sovereignty, not only for students, but we're also centering our Indigenous veterans and all our students on campus. So we're really trying to have an impact on, you know, the community at large. Katsiao yao, thank you.
Katsiao yao, Julian. And I just think it probably bears reminding our listeners that WSU is still in possession of, I think, about 80% of the original Morrill land grab. So it's still in possession of about 71,000 acres of Indigenous land. And how much is WSU gleaning every year from Indigenous land trusts?
I've kind of heard conflicting stories. I've heard some 15 million, others say 20 million. But we can say 15 to 20 million. What's 5 million profiting from, you know, Indigenous or and occupying Indigenous lands? So there's an element of reciprocity, right, that universities are finally stepping up and becoming real people, becoming the people that they should be, but also supporting the people that they should be supporting. So this is really, really great, I feel like, time for Indigenous knowledge holders and uplifting, you know, the teachings, the lessons, life lessons from our ancestors. Again, like, none of these ideas are new. Okay. These are systems, right? Economies that have been handed down from us since time immemorial that are in reciprocal relationship with the land. The land is living.
So the conference again on April 19th and 20th is free and open to the public. And you can register at tinyurl.com/567CAVKJ. That's tinyurl.com/567CAVKJ. Cats Yow Yow. And thanks again to Julian Ankeny and Robin White, as well as Ash DeBuse. This has been Desiree Helgers for the Old Mole Variety Hour. We will see you hopefully on April 19th, 20th, and 21st.